Not long ago, the jazz world lost Bob Helm. Bob was a wonderful clarinet and reed player, best known for his role in sparking a renewed interest in early jazz. He was a key player in the West Coast traditional jazz revival, which was a return to the roots of jazz as it was played in the 20s by King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, and Jelly Roll Morton. He was a dear, sweet man and a remarkable musician. For more than six decades, Bob Helm played his horn and studied the culture and history of early jazz. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, a weekly exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for being with me for this fond farewell to Bob Helm. In this hour, a discussion I had with Bob Helm in the early 1990s, as he recalled the heady days when, in the Lou Waters Yerba Buena Jazz Band, he and his comrades sparked a renewed worldwide interest in playing, studying, and recording early jazz. Helm continued performing vigorously into his eighth decade. Here's his nice little Hotter Than That jazz band from the 1990s with Leon Oakley on cornet. Born and raised in California, Bob Helm played exceptional clarinet, soprano, and tenor sax, evolving a distinct sound all his own. He performed in literally dozens of jazz bands before and during the big band era of the 30s, with Lou Waters and the West Coast jazz revivalists in the 40s, and with Turk Murphy in the 50s, and then on and off with Turk through the 1980s. Here's my discussion from more than a decade ago with the late Bob Helm. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Dave.
As a professional musician, you date back to the 1930s.
That's correct. 20s, actually.
Well, when did you first start playing?
Well, I started playing in a silent movie pit band in 1925.
1925.
And a small pit band in Dos Palos, a little central California, San Joaquin Valley town. I started playing alto then, and the leader of the band said, well, if you could get him to play tenor, I'll give him a job. So
you picked up tenor.
I had a job playing in the pit band. It was a little four-piece band playing between the reels, and this was a one-horse town. It was a one-projector town, so... While he changed reels, the band would play a popular hit of the day.
So then you went from there on to other theater bands?
Nick Serpilio, the band leader, got some other jobs with bigger bands. And so we had many jobs with bigger bands using three saxophones. And from that, I got into the bigger 10-piece ballroom bands. And later on in Stockton, where in 1934, with the Walcott Valley Vagabonds, they auditioned for trombone players to play Tommy Dorsey's high parts, which were very popular at that time. And, that was the first time I met Turk. So he didn't join the band. He saved himself a horrible road tour by not doing that, too.
But so, but you and Turk remained in contact, and then...
Later on, we played in some... the band that followed the Fred Walcott band after it broke up played a lot of the jobs at Avon, and Turk was playing in that band, which is Merle Hard Band. That was in 1936.
What was the name of the band again? Merle?
Merle Howard. Well, eventually, Merle Howard Band broke up also, and so Turk and I came to the Bay Area and played around in Oakland with various jobs, worked day jobs. We had met Lou, though, formerly in Reno, Lou and Gershbeck. Paul Lingle were playing with a band in Reno, and the ballroom had burned down and left them stranded, so the manager put them to work fixing the ballroom up so they could go to work again. And we played a one-nighter and happened to meet all the guys in the band. So later on, we renewed our acquaintance and came to San Francisco.
So you're talking about the meeting of the individuals who later became the nucleus of the formation of the Yerba Buena Jazz Band?
Yes.
Now, we actually have a recording here, extant of you, with the band at the Suites Ballroom.
Lou had always been an arranger for, with the Carol Loeffner, Loeffner Harris Band. He did many arrangements for that band and other bands, and he was quite in demand, actually. And he could have gone into the studios in L.A. had he chosen to do that, but he didn't like deadlines like that, so chose not to do it. And, he liked the freedom of a looser band other than the stereotype hotel ballroom band. So Lou put together a big band and was able to get a job at Sweets, and we were in there a couple of engagements, and strangely enough, the Sweets brothers did a very good business on it, playing much more jazz than their usual bands played.
We've got Floating Down to Cottontown here.
That was one of the rousers, I think. Thank you.
So that was a successful residency that went on for a couple of
years? Yes, it was, and it got a little too exuberant for the Sweets Brothers, and they had a live mic on the bandstand and engaging in all kinds of fantasies and everything, and some of them alluded to them, and they took offense. And so we didn't work there very long after that. It wasn't because the band wasn't drawing or successful, it was because it was a little too wild, I guess.
Got out of
hand. They used to tell us to cut it down about 11:30 and play some waltzes and slow moonbeam tunes.
Well, we've got a couple here from Sweets Ballroom that are by no means moonbeam tunes.
Well, there were the tunes that probably occasioned the Sweets Brothers to say, hey, you guys knock it off and play some waltzes. So you'll probably, these are ones that probably gave rise to that.
This is amazing. These have survived now. They've never been issued. And these were originally acetates recorded at the time, 38, 39?
Yes, they were recorded by one of the tenor saxophone players, new record cut machines, I believe it was, Henry Abramson. And he recorded this whole afternoon session. I think there were two rehearsal sessions, and he recorded the whole thing on his home recorder. And the acetates sat in Lou's chicken house up in Cotati for 35 years, I guess. And Ed Sprankle was able to transfer them to tape and remaster them.
Also in these recordings, these acetates actually recorded at the Sweets Ballroom in 1938-39 of Lou Waters' big band. We've got Copenhagen. Any comment on that?
Well, they were in the same category as Floating Down to Cottontown. They were rip-roaring tunes. It was probably the best big band I ever played in. When it got to romping on one of these tunes, it was, strangely enough, it was unfamiliar music to most of the people who were used to big band swing type arrangements. And
what instrument were you playing, and what was the lineup of the band?
It had a strange reed section. There were three tenor saxophones and three clarinet.
Wow.
Doubling on clarinet. And three tenors, if you remember those days, was all the rage in the hotels. Three snoring tenors snoring away with one muted trumpet was practically the menu at every hotel in San Francisco. Henry King's band and Eddie Duchin, and that was a standard instrumentation, three tenors. But we never played as three tenors. It was always two tenors and with the section, the brass section, of two trumpets, two trombones, and one clarinet wailing above it, and one trombone free to wail below it. So there's a nucleus in the center that's played the lead and block harmony, and then a wild trombone and a wild clarinet. So,
well, let's give a listen to these very rare acetates from 1938 and 39, Lou Waters' big band at Sweets Ballroom in Oakland. Thank you.
At the end of that time, Lou decided that he didn't want to continue on with the big band. His reasons were that it was too confining to play the same way, the same tune, in the same manner every night. As a consequence, everybody would suffer from the usual boredom that comes from playing stock arrangements and even very good specials 5 nights a week. And that coupled with the popular hits of the day, he wanted to do away with that whole program, and so he decided to go with a smaller band with more freedom, and so out of that recruited some old friends, and that was the start of the Yerba Buena band, which started about 1938 after the end of the Sweet Spot band. And first rehearsal, I guess, was with Paul Lingle and Gersback and Lou, of course, then Turk and Bill Dart.
Bob's talking about the Yerba Buena Jazz Band and discussing the very earliest years of the individuals who later formed that band. I'm Dave Radlauer with you for Jazz Rhythm. We've been listening to some rare acetates of Lou Waters' Sweets Ballroom Big Band. These were originally cut on a home Recco cut type of machine, which used an acetate disc. Bob, of course, played reeds, clarinet, and later soprano sax with the Yerba Buena Jazz Band, and then Turk Murphy's Jazz Band. We'll hear Turk a little later. In this next set, we'll also hear some, again, rare acetates of the Yerba Buena Jazz Band from 1939 rehearsals at the Hotel Mark Twain. Incidentally, in that last set, we heard Copenhagen, Shake That Thing. We started with Floating Down to Cottontown, all from the Lou Waters Sweets Ballroom Big Band. In this next set, we'll hear Panama from the Hotel Mark Twain Yerba Buena Jazz Band rehearsals. Again, these are rare acetates from 1939. And several performances by the Yerba Buena Band at Hambone Kelly's and from various and sundry sources. Thank you. So the response of some of the professional musicians and the musician establishment, as it were, I guess we're talking about the American Federation of Musicians local here in San Francisco.
Well, it was general. All the locals all over the country, the musicians that I contacted, there was no program for education, and I don't think there still is in the American Federation of Musicians as far as the background of where the music originated.
But you've described to me a situation not so much of ignorance, but even hostility on the part of some musicians toward this music.
Well, there was much hostility. There was such hostility amongst the ethnic groups and the musicians' unions were segregated at that time, and they weren't integrated until, I believe, in the middle of 1945. There were two unions, and musicians' unions in San Francisco.
So do you think the fact that you were white musicians playing black music led to problems, or it irritated some people?
It caused much resentment amongst other musicians because of the choice of the repertoire and the basis of the Yerba Buena band's library, and we were playing Jello Old Morton's music and King Oliver's and Scott Joplin's and many black composers, and in fact, I would say probably a preponderance of black, and that didn't sit right either, because there's still this animosity about the music, and there shouldn't have been any. Music is everybody's.
Yeah, I feel that way too. Was there any animosity from the blacks about whites playing black music?
I think not really animosity, but I've been suggested by a couple of guys, what are you playing those old cornball tunes for? Why don't you get hip?
So they viewed it as essentially an artifact.
Yeah, long gone stuff, long dead stuff. And in fact, the general attitude was not only amongst the black musicians or white musicians, all musicians, that every day and every way we're getting more modern. And catch this lick, Jack. You know, this is
the newest.
This is the Ian lick.
Roll, roll, I wanna go to heaven where the diner is, Jordan Road. Roll Jordan Road, roll Jordan Road. I wanna go to heaven where the diner is, Jordan Road. Now, brothers, you wanna be there? Yes, my Lord. Sitting there on that golden chair. Yes, my Lord.
Jordan Roll, the Yerba Buena Jazz Band live at Hambone Kelly's in 1950. The powerful vocal was by Clancy Hayes. Before that, some private tapes from Bob Helms' collection, Panama, Shake That Thing, Stardust, Copenhagen, and Floating Down to Cottontown, all the Sweets Ballroom Orchestra, and early rehearsals of the Yerba Buena Jazz Band. And incidentally, in recent years, Bob's private archive has become the source for quite a few historical issues of never previously released material. This is the first of three programs remembering and saying farewell to Bob Helm. In the second part, we'll hear his outstanding work with Turk Murphy, primarily through the 1950s, and the third show will be an eclectic mix of rarities and quite a few unissued live performances by Bob. Promotional support is provided by the Mississippi Rag, a monthly publication covering traditional jazz and ragtime personalities and contemporary events. Information at MississippiRag.com. Here's Bob with the Turk Murphy Jazz Band in 1951, one of the many tunes written by Turk. This is Little John's Rag, Wally Rose piano, Bob Kinch trumpet, Turk, of course, on trombone, and Bob Helm clarinet. We'll be right back.